This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
What's going on in America and in America itself? And one can't help but noticing the difference in attitude to the way that the leadership of the non-Jewish world is chosen and the way our leadership has been chosen. With them, it's almost disgusting to see the eagerness and the desperation with which the prospective office bearers pursue their office. The efforts that they put into it, the money that goes into being elected, the koichos that go into being elected, and the more Lashon Hara one speaks, the more chance there is of being elected, and the more one runs down the other side, the more chance there is of being elected. The isurim that has to be done, the immorality that has to be descended to get elected, and people are prepared to do it. People are prepared to dirty their hands and their minds and their mouths and their ears and everything, and to become poor if necessary in the process. The Olam Hazeh and the Olam Haba they're prepared to give up just that they should get a chance maybe to be the next one. Not even sure. All this is only to stand the right to fight the election, all in a suffix. And when finally they win, they can't manage to disguise the glee and pleasure and satisfaction and happiness that they have at least made it that far. And with Klal Yisrael it's so different. Shaul HaMelech, you see, when they elect him, he's in the cloak and hanging up people's coats. The last thing that entered his mind that he was going to be the king. Last thing. David HaMelech. It was the last thing that even entered Shmuel's mind that he was going to be the Melech. Shmuel goes to look for the king, sees David and doesn't even notice him. The last thing in anybody's mind. Moshe Rabbeinu has an argument with Ribbono Shel Olam. Send somebody else, get somebody else. What are you and me for? Who am I? What's all the other people? Not because Moshe didn't know his value. Not because David HaMelech didn't know his value and Shaul HaMelech didn't know his value. And so with all the other leaders. But it's a feeling of who needs the responsibility. Was darf ich das? I'm living a nice life, minding my own business. What do I need to get involved in that kind of thing? What do I get out of it? In what way will I be better off? In absolutely no way. There's absolutely nothing I can get out of it. And even if you'll say covered, you can get honor out of it. That's something that would have terrified them most of all. Because the Vilna Gaon says that it's not easy to be paid in this world for mitzvahs that one has done. Because the value is so great that there's no currency in this world that one can pay with. But we do see in Chazal that Chazal are sometimes worried that they have received part of their reward in this world. One thing, says the Vilna Gaon, honor, covered, that's part payment. Because kovod is already a spiritual currency, not a physical currency. God doesn't pay you with money for mitzvahs that you did. That's nothing. But kovod is already getting close to a spiritual hanor, to a spiritual nachas, and that can be part of your payment from Olam Haba. So if you would say to a Moshe Rabbeinu or to a David, well, you get honor out of it, you get fame, they would have run a million miles from that just for that. That's the last thing they want, still to get the Olam Haba in this world with cheap covered. Is that what they want? Rather than live in anonymity. And this tradition has remained a tradition throughout history. In the first disqualification to Rabbonus is a person that wants to be a Rav. The first disqualification. If you, nowadays things are a little bit different. Nowadays there's an eagerness to attract people into yeshivas, which causes one sometimes to compromise on the quality of people that are attracted into yeshivas. But not so long ago, it used to be a little bit more difficult. And you used to be warned. A young boy used to go, he wants to become a rabbi. And he would be sent over to yeshiva. He used to be warned before your event. And the Rosh Yeshiva says to you, why are you coming to learn? Just one thing. Don't say because you want to become a rabbi, because he'll turn you around there and then and send you home. So no, he doesn't want to, even if he wants to become a rabbi. That's a disqualification. He doesn't want to become a rabbi. He wants to become, who are you to want to become anything? But we're going to analyze it further this evening and notice the fitness in somebody who wants it. It's not just that it's underfitting. It's not that it's arrogant. No, that's nothing to do with it. It's mad. It's plain and simple meshuggah. It's somebody who doesn't understand what he's doing. And we see it throughout the ages. That's how it is. The situations of rabbonus that had to be fulfilled, people were pushed into it. They were either sometimes forced into it because you had talmidei chachamim who simply had nothing to live on anymore, and they were offered a position. That's it. They had to support a family. Other times, the rosh yeshivas said to them, "You've got to take the job." Somebody once came to the Chofetz Chaim and said he's been offered the rabbonus, and he doesn't feel that he's fitting for it. The Chofetz Chaim said, "You're quite right. You're not fitting for it. There's just nobody better, so you better take it." And this is something which has been a stamp of Jewish leadership throughout the ages. Somebody suggested recently to me that we should re-establish the Sanhedrin. So I asked him if he could name me five potential members of the Sanhedrin. So he answered very wisely that he possibly could if he mixed in those circles, but he doesn't know the people. So I assured him that it wasn't so, that even if he mixed in those circles, he wouldn't be able to name five who would be fit for it. But there's another thing too. Even if one could name 5 or 70 who would be fit for it, if they would agree to sit on it, it would be their first disqualification. It's not, if a person wants it, it's his ask. He has to be forced into it and pushed into it, and not falsely, genuinely. And what we'll look at it this evening is some of the reasons why there's such reluctance to take positions of leadership among Klal Yisrael. By the Goyim, it's understandable. With the Vilna Gaon's Yisod, if honor is a spiritual pleasure, then it could be that it's the craving of an individual for Olam Haba which makes him want to do these things. The closest you can come to understanding an Olam Haba is Kovod. Kovod is the only nachas that one can get in this world which is spiritual, which even a grober person can enjoy, and yet it's spiritual. Most spiritual things, if you grob, you can't enjoy. I think that's going to be Gehenna. It's the place where a lot of grob people will be trying desperately to understand what's going on. So if you can't, if you're coarse, the spiritual things don't mean anything to you. It doesn't affect you. You don't enjoy them. Kovod, a coarse person can also enjoy. So it could be that when a coarse person craves for spiritual enjoyment, the closest he can come is Kovod. So he pursues Kovod with Mesirut Nefesh, prepared to give his life for it.
There is a different situation which one must bear in mind also, and that is, although one will find both among the kings and among Rabbonim and Rosh Yeshiva a tremendous reluctance to get involved, once they're involved they don't give up very easily. You find even with David HaMelech, when Shaul was pursuing him and chasing him, if he was so reluctant to take the Malchus in the beginning, why didn't he opt out? Why didn't he resign? Nobody wants me. Shaul doesn't want me. The people don't want, nobody wants me, so drop out. That's not. Once it is clear to an individual that it is the Ratzon Hashem, that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants him to hold a particular position, then to opt out would be an abrogation of that responsibility. That will never be. So you very seldom, if ever, will you find a Rov who, because of pressure, resigns and says, "Look, I didn't want it in the first place. I was pushed into it. If that's the way you feel about me, do me a favor. Goodbye to you. Let's get somebody else." Rov will never do that. If I was put into this position, then it's because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to hold this position, and now you'll jolly well put up with me. And they fight for it. And that's also how it's always been. So on the one hand, there's been this tremendous reluctance to get involved, but once taken on the responsibility is taken very seriously and very permanently. In the last few shiurim, various different shiurim, we've had examples that really indicate to us what this is all about. Let me first describe to you how Chazal see Olam Haba, the world to come. There's the story, for example, in Gemara Tainis Daf Kafhei. Have a regila divisu lemechme tanure kol mavi d'shabso v'shadyo akitro. it was the habit of the wife of Rabbi Hanina ben Boitza to light a fire every Erev Shabbos, every Friday, and to put grass or something in there that used to make smoke.
Because she used to be embarrassed, she had nothing to cook, and the neighbors would notice there was no smoke coming out of the chimney. They used to live on carobs, that's all they used to eat. Charuvim, they used to pick carobs, and that's all they had to eat. They couldn't afford bread, they couldn't afford meat and fish, certainly not. That's it, carobs is all they had, charuvim. And she did this mishum kisufa, because she was embarrassed. So every Friday she used to gather some grass, and the smoke used to go up, and that way she, at least the neighbors wouldn't notice that she's got nothing. But she happened to have this bad neighbor.
Omra, and this bad neighbor looks out the window and she sees smoke coming out of Mrs. Bendoso's chimney, and she says, "Michti, 1 minute. Your dana the less luvalumidi. I know they've got nothing. My kulihai.
What is all this going on there? All this smoke coming out every fire. What's she cooking in there?"
And you know these kinds of neighbors, they can't sleep at night if they don't know what she's cooking there or what she isn't cooking there. As with the tafla above, so she went and knocked on the door. Of course, she was coming with some kind of mitzvah. She was coming to bring her flowers for Shabbos, or she was coming to ask how she was. She was a reason why she was coming. She wasn't coming to snoop. That's what she wanted to find out, is why there was smoke coming out. Ichsevo, so the Balabosta, Mrs. Bendoza, it was embarrassed to see anybody in that situation, that they should come and see straw in the fireplace. Va'ailo le'indruno. And she went upstairs. She went into an attic or something upstairs and disappeared. That, of course, didn't stop the naughty neighbor from next door from trying the door. So she tried a few times. Of course, she's now worried that maybe Mendoza isn't well. And then, of course, she can't open the door. Rabbi Hanina is in the Beit HaMidrash still. And she maybe can't open the door, so of course she would open the door and make sure that everything's all right. She's a good-hearted neighbor, after all. You know those people. Is avid lo nisa, a miracle was done. The chazi, the tanura, moli lachmas. She walked in and she saw the oven full of bread. The agma moli lisho, and the baskets were full of more dough ready for kneading. Amro lo plenisa plenisa. She called to Mrs. Bendoza. I see matter the kachalik lachmech. Bring the shovel, the spade, that you take the bread out of the oven with, because your bread is about to burn. Omrullah, she said, Mrs. Bendoza, look at the presence of mind. Up under the hachi aile, yes, that's what I'm upstairs for. Come to fetch the spade. Tana, we learned, af hi lahavi mirda nichneso. She, that's Taka, she was telling the truth. She did go to fetch something to take the bread out with. Because she was used to miracles already. The neighbor came in and shouted, "The bread's ready." It didn't shock her. These things had obviously happened before, and she was quite used to it. Amr Le Devisu, one day, his wife, that's Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, the same woman, said to him, "As Amos Nezu Benitzai Kulihai," she sighed, she couldn't keep sitting. How long are we going to go on suffering like this? Why do you think they were suffering? Do you think that Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, had he wanted a job as a teacher in a cheder, couldn't have got a job? He could. Do you think if he wanted a job as a dayan on a beis din, he couldn't have got it? He could. And if he wanted to be a rov of a town, even a chief rov, he could have got it. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, any community in the world would have grabbed him and paid him millions to serve them. And he lives in Chavivim. Not prepared to take a penny. And she asks him, do we have to carry on like this? Won't you consider a job or something? Omar, lo my naivij, he said to her, what should we do? So what did she answer? What did any wife answer?
Go out and get yourself a job.
Boy, rachmid, nisfilachmid, you should have done better, but the Rebbeinu should give you something also.
Doesn't enter her mind that he should waste his talents at working, or chas v'sholom that he should take money for his Torah. Doesn't enter her mind as a possibility, but that you should daven a little bit more, and that we should get something that year.
Borachmi, so she went, he went, and he davened. And she wasn't saying it just as maybe if you daven. She knew if you daven they would get. That's why she was getting a bit frustrated that they had nothing. he went and he davened, he prayed, Yotzeso kemin pisas yad, v'yahavu lechad kara dipturid dahave. A hand came out and handed him the leg of a golden table, a golden leg of a table. Chazo chazye bechalme, he saw in a dream, Osidi tzadikid achli afturid dahave isle lakare. He saw in his dream that in the world to come, the tzaddikim are going to sit at golden tables with three legs. The ihu achlo afturid tzvei karin. He's going to be sitting at a table with three legs. So in a dream, which means that this was part of his olam habo that was taken off and given to him. Amar lo, he said to her, Nichalach de mechel achli kuli alme. After the Mishlin, the Anan after the Mechse. He said it comes back home one day with this big piece of gold. And it's true that not so many years ago, gold was only worth $30 an ounce or $32 an ounce. And a few years before that, it was worth only about $16 an ounce. But in those days, it was worth thousands of dollars an ounce. Much more valuable. So he says, here's the leg of the table. Are you happy, before we take this, that when it comes to Olam Haba, everybody's going to be sitting at a table with three legs, and we're going to be balancing our two-legged table over there?
So she says, "My nazi, what can we do?"
So she says, "Boy, rachmi de neshkelinu minach. You should be mispalo that I take it back. We don't need it."
Boy, Rachmi, he prayed, v'shaklu, and I took it away. Tana, and we learned, Godelo yones achron yusim in harishrin. The second miracle was greater than the first miracle. That he got the golden leg, that's understandable. But taking it back, that the Gemara regards as an exceptionally outstanding miracle, that it was actually removed from them again.
So what do we see here? A family in abject poverty, who's not prepared to take even the leg of their table of Olam Haba. Leg of the table doesn't mean that the Olam Haba they're taking, they'll still sit in a very fine place, and they'll still hear shiurim from Moshe Rabbeinu and from all these great people, and Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak and Yaakov, and they'll be sitting in the front row, and they'll have all the good things. Just one thing, their table will have two legs, not three legs. That's the only thing. So they'll have to prop it up with something. That's all. It won't be complete. Rather live in poverty. It doesn't enter their mind as a possibility that they should draw on their credit of Olam Haba, even one little tiny thing. They rather live in poverty. There are similar medroshim. There's a medrash at the end of the Kude. Maisa, there was a story. But Talmid Echol Shor Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai Shiyotso Chutzloretz Uvo Oshir. A certain Talmid of Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai went overseas, and he did some business there, and he came back wealthy. So you can imagine how the other Talmid himself, they've been all learning together, again in abject poverty. And this fellow goes away for a few months and he comes back and he's rolling in money. And the Talmidim saw him and couldn't help being jealous of him. So they started approaching Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. One by one, he started getting wind of what was going on. All of a sudden, one Talmid came. He feels that it's important that he goes and visits his granny in Chutz Loretz. And a few minutes later, another Talmud came. He wants to switch yeshivas now, and he's got an opportunity to go overseas. And another time, all of a sudden, the fashion was to go overseas. Rabbi Shimon Yochai realized what was happening. The Yodo Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Yochai knew it. He noted it. So he took the yeshiva out on a picnic. He hired one of these old trains, and he went into the mountain valleys, and he took them into a big valley in one of these big mountains. And he turned to the side and he doesn't. The Omar, and he said, Biko, Biko, Valley, Valley, Himoli dinorezo, fill yourself up with Krugerrands. Hitchilo meshechez dinorezo lifnei. The Krugerrands started falling out of the mountain, and the valley just started filling up with Krugerrands. Omar, he said to his Talmidim, all these approaches I've had recently that you want to go and study overseas, if it's money you're after, yes, you want to take as much as you want. Here it is. But one thing you need to know,
Kol mishu neitel achshav chelko shel olam haba hu neitel. Anybody who takes now is taking off his olam haba. Doesn't come from nowhere. This is yours. Belongs to you. You can take it now, or you can keep it. Olam haba. She'im mat nischar ha-Torah el olam haba. Because reward for Torah is in olam haba. Obviously, nobody touched anything. Then it tells the story with Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, exactly the same story as with Rabbi Chanina bar Doiso, that one Erev Shabbos there was nothing to eat at home, and he went out of town and prayed to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and a precious stone was given to him from heaven, and he changed it for money and came home with the whole Shabbos ready prepared. And his wife said, "Where does this come from?" And he didn't want to say it. He says, "No, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave it to me." He answered, "The truth, I got it from God." She said, "Look, if you don't tell me where you got it from, forget this God business. Where did you get it from? I'm not eating anything unless I know where it comes from." He told her the Maisa. He said to her, God gave it to me. Amrullah, she said, "Eini to emes klum, I won't taste the thing. No Shabbos eating, I'm going to fast the Shabbos. And she told until you will tell me, shetachziro mitzvah Shabbos, that as soon as mitzvah Shabbos comes, you'll go and get that precious stone back and give it back to God." "Well, I don't want it." He said to her, "Why?" "Do you want your table to be lacking in Olam Haba and your friends' tables will be full?" Rabbi Shimon didn't know what to do, so he went to Rebbe. He told him the Maisa. "I need it for Shabbos, so I went and prayed and I got a precious stone. My wife won't take it. She claims that it will come off our Olam Haba." He said to Lech Emolah, "Go and tell the wife, if your table will be lacking anything, in Olam Haba, I'll give you whatever lacking from my table. You don't have to worry about anything. Nothing will be lacking in your table." She was an outstanding woman, this Holoch La'amalot. So he went and he told her. Rebbe says, "You don't have to worry. Anything that's missing, we can claim from his table in Olam Haba. There'll be no problem. He underwrites it." Amrullah, she said to him, "Lech imi lemi shelimodchot limedchot Torah. Come with me to the person who teaches you Torah. Let me see this Rebbe of yours. Let's go together." Amrullah, Rebbe. She said to him, "Rebbe, you're going to pay us off. You're going to give us in Olam Haba. You're going to give us. Michael, you came from Cape Town on Friday already, not tonight." He says, "Does one man see another in Olam Haba? What do you mean we're going to come and claim from you? Isn't every tzaddik going to be a world on his own? You're not going to have that much contact in Olam Haba, according to the way I've learned," she says. "I might be wrong, but that's the way I've learned." She tackles Rebbe, "Can you believe it?" Kivan Sheshoma, and she proves it from Sukkim and Kohelis. When he heard this, Holach v'hezul, he went and gave the stone back. Rebbe was mekabel and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shimon bar Chalafta accepted it. And mekabel, she was right, and I gave it back. So we have here three cases where the Chachomim are not prepared, or would rather go through a life of tremendous suffering in this world than chas v'sholom to take one little tiny thing from the world to come. And you can imagine the greatness of these tzaddikim. Imagine how much Torah they've learned, how much Torah they've taught, how much chesed, how much goodness. Imagine what's in store for them. We have no vision. For one mitzvah, we can't imagine how much is in store. Just for one mitzvah. It's not possible. It is beyond us. Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that one moment in Olam Haba is worth more than all the pleasures imaginable of Olam Hazeh. Just imagine all the pleasures of this world. One moment is worth much more than that. So how can we imagine the pleasures that are in store for us for one mitzvah? And learning Torah, every mitzvah, every word of Torah is worth more than all the mitzvahs, if one wants to work it accounting wise. Chazal says, every word of Torah is worth, in terms of reward, more than all the mitzvahs put together. So if we can't understand the reward of one mitzvah, can we understand the reward of all the mitzvahs? Oh, that's mind-boggling. It's completely beyond human ability to appreciate. And one word of Torah can demand that tzchah. So if you learn a page of Torah with a few hundred words on it, and if you learn 2 pages, 3 pages, 10 pages, 20 pages, do you know what there is in life?
So how much is one or two krugerrands out of that? So you know, they'll pick up a few krugerrands and on that they can live without worrying for another couple of years. Is that going to make such a difference in Olam Haba? One precious stone, enough to buy a Shabbos. And what was it? It was a tiny little diamond. Oh, well, it wasn't even a pearl, just a diamond. Enough to buy a Shabbos. She wouldn't take it. She wouldn't accept it. Why not? Not to take anything which comes from Olam Haba, Chas v'Shalom. Not to take off our account in Olam Haba, even the tiniest little bit. That being the case, then one begins to understand some of the hazards of leadership. It says at the end of the Megillah, Ki Mordechai ha-Yehudi, Mordechai the Jew, Mishne le-Melech ha-Chashverosh. Mordechai finally becomes second to the king, he becomes prime minister. So he's reached a position of great elevation. He's prime minister. The Godel la-Yehudim, and he's great among the Jews as well. Not just the prime minister, he's a Godel b'Yisrael as well. The Rotsui l'roi vechov, and acceptable to most of his brethren. Ask the Gemara in the end of the first parak of Megillah, l'roi vechov v'loi l'chol echov. After what Mordechai did, he saved Klal Yisrael. He's acceptable only to the majority of Jews, but not to all of them. Answers the Gemara Malamed, it comes to teach us Shepirshu mimenu miktsas Sanhedrin. That some of his colleagues on the Sanhedrin just withdrew a little bit from him. They weren't quite as close and as intimate with him as they used to be. Omar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef says, Godel Talmud Torah Yosef me'atzolus nefoshos. Learning Torah is greater than saving lives. The Mi'ikora Choshiv Leilu Mordechai Basar Dalit V'Libesoif Basar Chamisha. When it lists the people who came from Zerubbabel to who came from Yisrael to Bovel in Ezra, it lists Mordechai fifth on the list. In Nehemiah later on, when it makes the same list, it lists him sixth on the list. So he's actually fallen in stature one notch, says Rav Yosef. That's because he was busy saving lives instead of learning Torah. Had he been learning Torah, he wouldn't have dropped. Altogether, this is a very important Gemara. In the light of what we said a few moments ago, one begins to understand why learning Torah is greater than saving lives. Saving lives. The Gemara says, Chazal say, that one word of Torah is worth more than all the other mitzvahs put together. One of the other mitzvahs is saving lives. Saving a life is a mitzvah. But one word of Torah is worth more than everything, including saving lives all put together. Imagine how much a whole shear is worth, how much a whole blat is worth. There's no way one can compare the value that the Torah places on learning Torah to all the other mitzvahs put together. And therefore, bitul Torah, wasting opportunity to learn, is considered the most serious. And one can understand also philosophically why it is so important, apart from all the Kabbalistic reasons. Stand philosophically, because a word of Torah can change a person, and an individual changed can have a chain effect on all sorts of other people. It's like an atom bomb. There's no end to the effect that one learned word of Torah that penetrates one person's ears, what effect that can have on the world. It's a changed stature, it's a qualitative change, not a quantitative change. If one saves another Jew, it's a great thing, but it's a quantitative thing. So I've saved one life, one Jewish person. Good. So he's around. He wouldn't have been around before, now he is around. But there's no qualitative change. I haven't made him different to what he was. One word of Torah changes the quality. And two words of Torah changes the quality. And a whole parak of Gemara and a concept. Anything that one integrates and absorbs changes the whole essence of the being. And that's what life is all about. And that's what this world is all about. And that's what the mitzvah is all about. To change ourselves. There's nothing that changes us as much as learning. Therefore, there's no comparison between the value of the mitzvah of learning to any other value. And therefore, the din is that while one's busy learning or doing any other mitzvah for that matter, one may not stop to do anything, even to save lives. Unless there's nobody else there to save the life. That's the thing. If there's nobody else, then one does it. So emotionally, what one thinks of if one's sitting and one's learning and one hears Chas v'Shalom tires screeching outside and somebody shouting and the people in trouble, One thinks, oh, an opportunity to save a life, and one rushes out full of the drama of the moment. Really, it's a big shikul. Do I stop my learning? It may be there's somebody else outside who can attend to it, and if there is, I don't go. Because there's no way that that's as great. The only thing is, if there's nobody there, I have to go. So I go because there's nobody else there. But does that mean that I've learned the Torah? No. Do I get the reward for learning the Torah? No. Have I made the same progress I would have made learning Torah? No. It's just that the halacha requires that I stop and I make that self-sacrifice. Because that's the din, that's just how it is. And I go and I save the person. Not because that's more important than what I'm doing. There is nothing more important than what I'm doing. When Mordechai had to make the decision, am I going to save the whole of Klal Yisrael or am I going to sit in the base of Medrash and learn? There are two ways he could have looked at that decision. Which is more important? The answer to that is learning. And that's the conclusion he would have drawn. There's another way he can have to look at it. Al pi halacha, what must I do? What is the law? Then he's got to say, is there anybody else who can save the Jewish people? And he has to look around and say, no. There's nobody else who will be able to do what I think I can do. Then he has to stop. But not because saving the Jewish people is more important, says Rav Yosef. Godel Talmud Torah Yosef Ma'atolus Nefoshes. Saving lives is not as important as learning Torah. And in fact, and not as even saving the lives of the whole of Klal Yisrael, Purim, giving us that Yom Tov, the whole business, was not important. Mordechai suffered terribly in his learning because of those months that he had to have his mind in politics and in scheming and in planning and in plotting. His learning suffered. It's just that that is the din. He had to do it, but not because it's more important. One has to be very careful to keep that straight in one's mind. Sometimes one has to spend time being mekarev somebody else to Torah. One has to put in an effort to bring somebody else into Torah. What's more important? Is that more important, or is learning Torah myself more important? The answer is learning Torah myself is more important. Because the greater I become and the more stature I develop, the more I can affect the world. However, there are certain dinim that I've got to, because nobody else who can be makari that individual, I have to do it, but not because it is more important. And we must not build that into a value that supersedes the value of learning Torah ourselves. Never. We must do it because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to do it, but not because it's more important than learning Torah ourselves. There was a young Kollel fellow recently who had the opportunity of getting a job in a yeshiva that deals with newcomers, with people who are just beginning their learning experience. And he went to ask one of the Gedolei Yisrael, should he take the job? And the Gedolei Yisrael said, if you need the money, you should take the job. But one thing is, don't think that the time you spend doing that is called learning. Don't ever think that you're learning when you're preparing those shiurim and you're giving those shiurim. Don't think that's learning. Learning is only when you're learning on your level. That's called cheder teaching. That's teaching children. Which is an important mitzvah, and it's something, if you need the job, you take it. Or if there's nobody else to do it, you have to do it. But if you don't need the money and there are other people to do it, then obviously you've got to carry on learning. Don't confuse that with learning. Don't ever think that that is learning. That's not learning. And the same with Mordechai. Don't think that going to save the Jewish people is more important than your learning. But he had to do it. And he lands up losing stature. So we have a situation where a leader in Yisrael has to choose to do something which is to his disadvantage in order to save Klal Yisrael. And what disadvantage? What does he have to give up for it? Does he have to give up his house for it? No. Does he have to give up his motor car for it? No. His Olam Hazeh is improved as a result of it. He's better off. He's now Prime Minister. He's better off than he used to be. What does he have to give up for this job? Olam Haba. Rotzi L'Roiv Echov. He's down in the Sanhedrin. He's dropped a few notches. His name is put lower down than it used to be. It's his Olam Haba that he has to sacrifice. And we've just learnt of what suffering these people are willing to go for, rather than to take one measly little Krugerrand off their Olam Haba. And here Mordechai has to lose status, he has to be dropped levels, and it should be recorded like that for everybody to see, in order to save the Jewish people. What a sacrifice. That's why Jewish people don't like to become leaders. What do I need it for, says Mordechai? What do I need it for? I could sit in the Sanhedrin quietly learning and paskening shilas and dealing with my colleagues. What do I have to get involved in this nonsense for? The answer is, sorry Mordechai, that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from you at this moment.
it would be better for me not to do it in a sense. For you personally it would be better, but the Ribbono Shalom needs you. Obviously in the long term, if that's what the Ribbono Shalom wants, he'll be paid for it too. And the need for him to do it is because Am Yisrael got themselves into this low status to start with. So you have a situation where the leader is having to suffer his own personal status in Olam Haba because the generation isn't up to it. If he would have to suffer because he's not up to it, if he would have to suffer even though everybody is up to it, then you could say it doesn't matter, you don't, if that's what God wants, you're not going to have to suffer in the end altogether. But Lamaisa, he's suffering because they haven't come up to scratch, and that's why the Homan thing occurred and the whole business took place. So what does it come out when a person takes on leadership? If my people don't live up to scratch, I'm the one in the end who's going to have to suffer. What Meshugin thinks like that is prepared to take that kind of risk? What, and this one's forced into it. What person would voluntarily walk into a position of leadership? That he has to have his mind ready. It's absolutely absurd. To give away part of his Olam Haba because the people aren't up to it. What does he want it for? We have the same in this week's Sedra, as we learnt last night. When Moshe Rabbeinu is prepared to give his life to perform the mitzvah of wiping out the Midianim, he knows that when he's finished this mitzvah he dies, and if he schleps the mitzvah out he could live a little bit longer, and as much as he craves and desires to live, he doesn't schlep the mitzvah out 1 second, but immediately he performs it. That means his moser nefesh, he gives his life for this mitzvah. He knows that the quicker he does this mitzvah, the quicker he dies, and he does it with all the speed he's capable of. Mesiras nefesh. And yet comes the question of actually doing the end of the mitzvah, which is the most important of all, and getting the credit for it, and he calls on Elazar to do it. He calls on Pinchas to do it. Not me. You started the mitzvah, Pinchas, it belongs to you, as we learned last night, the derech eretz of it, the morality of it. It's your mitzvah. I can't, as much as I crave to do it, I can't take the credit for it. You've already started. So please, Pinchas, you go ahead and you do the mitzvah. Where we discussed last night, it's not a sacrifice of this world. That he'd made already. Sacrifice of this world was nothing for Moshe. His whole life he was sacrificing for this mitzvah. But he's prepared to sacrifice Olam Haba as well for it. Where he could have got the credit for the mitzvah, he's prepared to give away that credit because morally it belongs to somebody else, halachically it belongs to somebody else. And he gets the credit. And there are many such examples. We have another example, also in this week's Sedra. After the army comes back from wiping out the Midianim, by Yetzu Moshe Elazar Hakohen v'chol Nesiyo Hayido Likrosom, and Moshe and Elazar Hakohen and all the princes of the community go out to meet the incoming army, El Michutz LaMachane, to the outside of the camp. By Yiktsoif Moshe al Pekude Hechoyel, and Moshe got angry with the generals of the army, with the chiefs of the army, Sori Alopim v'Sori Ameyas, the heads of the thousands and the heads of the hundreds, Aboy Mitzvah Milchomor, came from the army in the war. Ayomir Aleh Moshe, and Moshe says to them, Hachayisem kol nekeva, did you leave all the women alive? And he climbs into them and he gives them what for and he tells them what to do. And Chazal say, in fact, that they were coming to ask him the Shaila. What do we do with the women? We weren't instructed. And still Moshe is angry because they should have known what to do with the women. Hein, hein, how you live in Israel, it was the women who caused the whole thing. They were responsible for the whole business. And they're the ones you keep alive. A little bit later, discreetly, the Elazar HaKohen gets up and he gives a shiur to the army. What's the shiur? How to kasher the kelim of the Midyonim. And from here we learn all the dinim of kashering kelim, by the way. How to kasher the kitchen, we learn from here. Elazar gave the shiur, and this shiur became the standard practice of every Jewish home for the thousands of years to follow. Chazal are worried, and Rashi brings the Chazal, what's Elazar doing giving a shiur in Moshe Rabbeinu's Beis HaMedrash? What's going on? Where's Moshe? Says Rashi, Lefi shebo Moshe lichlal kas, since Moshe came into the
category of anger. He was about to get a little bit angry. Bo lichlal tous, he came to making a mistake. Shenis almu mimenu hilchus geilei nochrim. He forgot the dinim of kasher and keli. Amazing thing. Every little rov does it for smicha. Everybody knows it. It's not simple, but it's the aleph beis of psak. Moshe Rabbeinu, the great Moshe, wasn't clear on them. He'd forgotten some, and he wasn't prepared to give that shir. Why? Because he came to anger. Who was he angry with? Klal Yisrael. For doing what? For not fulfilling the mitzvahs properly. What's he angry? Because somebody insulted him. There's no record of Moshe ever getting angry because he personally has been hurt or insulted. Never. Every time he gets angry, it's on a principle. Every time he gets angry, it's because they've done wrong. At the rock, when he hits the rock instead of talking to it, it's because they've taunted him to that position. And he's angry at the way they're treating the Ribbono Shel Olam, not the way they're treating him. Here too. You were told to go to Midian and wipe them out. Why have you left the women alive? Is it any personal interest that he has? Nothing. The halacha hasn't been properly observed. That's what he's angry about. And for that he forgets the halacha and the embarrassment and humiliation of having it recorded in the Torah that the source of our halachas of kashrus, of kashrin, kelim, come from Elazar, not from Moshe, because Moshe forgot them. It's a terrible thing to have such a thing. Imagine a professor. It goes down in the annals of the history of that university that this particular area, you don't learn from that professor because he doesn't know it. You get the professor's talmidim come and they teach it. The professor, he doesn't know this. It's an embarrassment. It's a professional degradation. That Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't be sharp in these halachas. So who needs it? Who needs such a situation? A leader will get angry. Not even angry. Borich Laukas, he came into the category of anger. He was. We wouldn't notice that he was angry. The Torah is made by Yiktsof that he was angry. Without the Torah giving the evidence, we would never notice. It's just Borich Laukas, he was beginning to get angry. And on that, he forgets the whole area of halachas. Who needs it? If he wouldn't have been the leader, he wouldn't have got angry. Not this time, and not the hitting of the rock. So, what would have been Moshe's fate had he not been the leader? He would have got into Eretz Yisrael, and he would have sat and learnt in his beloved country there, and there wouldn't have been a problem, and he wouldn't have had all these tzoras. What does he need it for? He doesn't need it. And therefore every leader of Yisrael has, before being given leadership, run away from it as far and as fast as he can. Because what do you need this kind of thing for? To risk an Olam Haba for the leadership? What for? And how did Moshe get angry? What does it mean? Several times in the Torah Moshe got angry. He's punished each time. He knows the dangers of anger, and he knows the Rambam. The Rambam paskens that in most characteristics one has to choose a middle path. It mustn't be too much this and not too much this. Go in the middle. Not too cruel, not too kind, go down the middle. Not too miserly, not too generous, go down the middle. But there are certain areas where you mustn't go down the middle of them, and one of them is kas, which is a midoro, it's a bad characteristic. He adlimoed a very bad characteristic to get angry. And one should get away from anger to the extreme. And one must train oneself not to get angry even over things which deserve to be gotten angry over. Even then you don't get angry. The Moshe Rabbeinu knew the Rambam. So what's he getting angry for so many times? The din is you don't get angry. Finished. The answer is also in the Sedra. The Bnei Gad and the Bnei Reuven and half of the Bnei Asher came to Moshe with a deal. This area where the Midianites were, used to be, and all these nations which they've now wiped out, is now empty. And it's ideal cattle pasture. So they figure they would like to take ownership of that area. They specialize in cattle, and they feel this would be the most suitable area for them to live, and they would like to stay there. And Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't say he gets angry, but one can see from the words that he uses. And they come to very nicely. If we have found favor in your eyes, Moshe Rabbeinu, may this land be given to your servants as an inheritance.
Alta avireinu es hayarden. Don't push us over the Yarden. We're happy to stay here. Ayoymer Moshe livnei Gad v'livnei Reuven. And Moshe said to the children of Gad and to the children of Reuven, Ha'achichem yovoyu lamilchomo v'atem teshvu foy. Do you think that your brothers are going to go over the Jordan and fight a war while you're sitting here in peace? Why are you making the people scared to cross the Jordan? Hashem into the land which Hashem has given to them. They didn't say anything. All they asked was for this piece of land. And he criticizes them. What are you doing? And why are you making them scared? Don't you remember? This is what your fathers did. When I sent them from Chodesh Barnea to see the land. And they went to Nachal Eshkol and they saw the land. And they made the Bnei Israel's hearts fearful. Not to want to come. God got angry. Ah, Mapole he gives them. And God swore that these people will never see that land. Excepting for Caleb bin Yefune and Yeshua bin Nun. Vayicharaf Hashem Yisrael vayinien b'midbar aboim shona, and God made the people dray around in the midst. He's pointing a finger at them.
Tachasa v'yisechem. You've got up in the place of your fathers. Talbus anushim chatoim. A badly cultured, sinful nation. People. This place, oydar charonaf Hashem in Yisrael. To add further to God's anger over Yisrael.
You want to depart from him. You want to destroy this nation. And for this he isn't punished.
No punishment.
Why not?
What he says here is no more angry and no less aggressive and critical
than he was of the army when they came back from Libya. Why is he punished then? He's not punished here.
The answer is, there's no din that you mustn't be critical. Not on the contrary. One has to be critical, and if something's wrong, one has to make a fuss. There he's punished because of an emotion. Vayiktsev, he got angry. Here it doesn't say vayiktsev. It doesn't say vayiktsev, but what does it sound like? If you go on in the Rambam, which we just learned, then we'll see the answer. Ve'im rotzo lahatil eino albonov uvnei veisoi o al hatzibur. What happens if a person needs to impose his fear over his children, family, or the community? Im hoyo parnos, if he was a leader. The Rambam asks an important question. Now that it is prohibited to get angry, what happens if wrong is done? And the leader believes him. This is something he's got to get angry about. What's he going to do? The rotzal lichay salayim kadesh shiyachzu lemutav. He knows that if he gets angry, they'll do tshuva, and they'll repair the wrong. Yare atzmei bifneim shu koyes kadei liyasro.
You must pretend to be angry in order to tell them off. V'ti yedatem yushevet bein lo levein atzmei. But inside you should be calm and relaxed. Like a person who is able to portray anger at the moment of anger, and really inside he's quite relaxed.
So we see two kinds of anger in this parasha.
In the end of the parasha here with the Bnei
Gad and the Bnei Reuven,
Moshe appears angry, but the Torah doesn't say Vayiktsev, which means that the Torah is made that in the heart of Moshe there was peace and calm.
This was wrong, and he wanted to stop this rot, this moving aside, setting themselves aside from the nation, the danger of affecting the courage of the nation. He foresaw there's nothing terribly wrong in what they're asking now, but he foresees the consequences that need to be stopped now,
and he stops it with an outpouring of anger.
But the Torah doesn't say Vayiktsev. Inside Moshe Rabbeinu is calm, and he puts forward a face of anger,
and he attacks them sharply,
but without a real emotion of anger.
Earlier on,
he's not criticized for what he said to them.
He's not criticized for the criticism he made of the army, and for what he told them, and for the way he told them off. Only for Vayiktsev he's criticized, for the emotion of anger, because there he really got angry.
then one begins to understand the danger of leadership in this particular area.
It's necessary to get angry sometimes.
It's necessary to act angry sometimes.
But it's a funny thing. If one feels something inside one, it's easy to act it. If one is acting something, it's easy to start feeling.
The Chinuch said, "Halev nigra achar ha-maisa," I think is the lesson.
The heart follows the actions. And the Chinuch showed him that if one wants to learn to how to love mitzvahs and to be zoris, like we were talking last night, how to be zealous and active in the mitzvahs,
one's heart has to be active and happy and completely involved.
How do you change your heart?
He says you start acting active and it affects you.
And it's a principle that we use in psychological counselling.
If a person is depressed,
act undepressed and you'll get undepressed very quickly.
Works like a charm.
All you've got to do is be able to force yourself to act. Okay, get busy doing things and making things, and within 10 minutes the depression is over.
Because we can govern our actions more easily than we can govern our hearts, as the Masilis we show them. To change our hearts is not easy. To change our actions is relatively easy. We can discipline ourselves and force ourselves to act in a way contrary to the way we're feeling.
And what do you find after a while? You start feeling that way, as the Vilna Gaon said this afternoon. You start off talking about doing wrong, and then you start doing wrong, and eventually you start feeling that way too. One's actions affect one's thoughts.
Not the other way around. The world thinks the great thing is to be spontaneous, to do what your heart feels like doing. That's the most honest thing.
In Torah it's fakir. It's
exactly the opposite. Decide with your head what is right to do. Do it, and you'll find very soon it'll be honest. Very soon your heart will feel that way too. It doesn't take very long. The heart doesn't like, it doesn't tolerate doing things that it doesn't agree with.
So there are two answers. Either you've got to do whatever your heart wants, or do what you want, and you'll soon find your heart will follow.
Like the leadership of today.
A leader doesn't like to see people doing things against its will. So in the old days when there used to be leaders, the leader knew how to impose his will on the people. Now, if the people do something against the will of the leader changes his will, that's all. Adapts his will to what the people are doing, and then they're not going against his will.
That's the same as our hearts works.
It will adapt itself to what we're doing, and it will justify what we're doing.
To decide what to do, that the mind has to do. So there's a tremendous danger.
A leader finds himself constantly having to put himself into a position of acting angry. And it's got to be a convincing act.
Nobody else must be able to detect that he's not really angry, otherwise it falls down.
So he's got to be terribly close to real anger. Just on the borderline.
And one step over that borderline,
and he forgets the halachas of Yoredeya. That's what happens to him.
One step over that borderline and he hits the rock instead of talking to the rock, and as a result of that he lands up not being able to go into Eretz Yisrael.
All the great things that he wants in his whole Olam Haba, never mind his Olam Hazeh, is endangered by the possibility of overstepping the mark. Why does a leader need such a thing? Who needs it?
A man is living his private life, he's got himself to be responsible for, his family, his immediate acquaintance. It's enough.
When one sees a person who desires leadership, one knows there's something rotten in his head.
He's out of his mind, Pasha.
He doesn't understand what he's doing. And he's a person to keep away from positions of leadership with every strength one has. Because one doesn't want Mishugoyim leading. And that's a Mishugas. A man to desire leadership, either it means he's ignorant, that he hasn't thought it out, he doesn't understand these responsibilities, or he's Pasha's mad. He's out of his mind.
And that we've got to try and keep away from, because no man in his right mind is going to want to take the risk of playing with his Olam Haba. We're not talking about Olam Haba.
That he'll lose his privacy, alright.
He wants to lose his privacy, he can lose it.
That he'll lose some of his comfort, that he'll lose some of his leisure time, or all of his leisure time.
Good, okay. You want to do that, you do it.
Very nice, admirable. But that you might lose your Olam Haba, are you out of your mind? That you're going to have to show anger and that might bring you to anger, that alone should be enough to make you run miles from any position of leadership.
And these people stand there for their photographs, with grins across their face, so happy that they're being put into the position where the chance of them getting any kind of Olam Haba is minimal.
It's hardly possible. Positions from which greater men than them have fled and fled and fled, and they want it and they work for it. What does one do, Lamaisa? Lamaisa, every human being finds himself in the position of some leadership. He has responsibilities and he's responsible to certain people. And everybody finds himself in those positions of leadership in which he cannot escape and is not permitted to escape. There's a beautiful letter of the Ramban, which he writes to his son. We haven't got a chance to go through the whole letter, although one day we should. But the first few lines are very, very basic. Because he tells you how you can live successfully without getting angry. Which includes acting angry, but not getting angry. He says, Tisnahig tomid ledaber kol dvorecho benachas v'chol odom v'chol es. When you speak to people, always speak slowly. Slowly doesn't mean that it becomes boring to listen to it. Nicely, slowly, benachas, softly, to every man at every time. And that way you'll save yourself from anger. Sometimes you've got to tell a person off. But if you do it softly, you don't get angry. It doesn't affect the emotions that much. So it comes out that as Moshe Rabbeinu was clearly following the Ramban, when he told the Bnei Gad and the Bnei Reuven off, the dramatic effect with which I was reading it was incorrect. That's not how he read it. He said, "Ha'achechem yavoyu l'milchomo." He's talking softly. They have to strain to listen to him. "Vatem teshvu foy." Your dad is going to go out to war, and you're going to sit here. "Lamatam liyunis leiv bnei Yisrael." What are you, now you're making the Jews scared. Don't you know your fathers did that when I sent them out and they went to Eshkol and he goes through the whole thing and God got angry with them as a result of that. And now and a sinful group of people like you have gotten up and in the place of your fathers, he says it softly, has much more effect. They don't write it off as the old man's getting emotional. Soft, they're listening, and he's using very harsh words. But benachas, softly, slowly. That's why you don't get angry. You can pretend to be angry, you can be sharp, you can be critical, you can tell a person off and put him in his place, but it doesn't affect you, not making you respond in a way which is negative. Tisnaik tomid ledaber kol dvorech o benachas v'chol odom v'chol es. Always speak benachas. And kaas, anger, is a bad middle, a bad characteristic which causes people to sin. And he brings various examples of this. And when you've learned to get away from anger, then you'll become modest. Interesting stage. The Ramban has the whole chiddush of the Ramban. But the road to modesty, the first thing you have to do is to get rid of anger. To be able to tell a person off without it affecting you. To be able to talk to people always benachas, never to get excited. That's a precondition to modesty. And we're told that Ha'ish Moshe Onov Moed Mikol Odom, that Moshe was the epitome of modesty. So we can be sure that that's the way he practiced and that's how he talked. Just occasionally he went a little bit too far. He raised his voice just a little bit above the limit set by the Ramban. And with that he came lichlal kaas. He just moved over that boundary line. Nobody else noticed it. Nobody else knew when he was angry and when he wasn't angry. You couldn't tell with Moshe Rabbeinu because he was always talking benachas. But God knew. And the Torah knows. The Torah is made by Yiktov. That for Moshe Rabbeinu is called angry. Not that he raised his voice and shouted and ranted and raved. That wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu. But on his level, that was by Yiktov. And so the Rebbeinu Shlom does not put any leader into a position of leadership that he is unable to tolerate. The Rebbeinu Shlom will not put a person into any position of mind leadership which he can't handle. If the Rebbeinu Shlom has put one into a position, he knows that you can handle it. Whether you will or not is your business. If he creates the concept of leadership, he creates the system as well. If you've got to show anger, yeah, there's a way of showing anger without getting angry. The Ramban's way, but one has to practice it. It requires tremendous skill to be able to come over angrily and to impress another person, and yet not get all emotional about it, not get all excited about it. So to look what I'm about. Where a person has been placed into that position, not only has he the capacity for it, but he also has the siyata dishmaya for it. So Ribbono Shel'olam assists him and supports him in that position. Where the person grabs a position which the Ribbono Shel'olam does not necessarily want him to have, if a person wants something badly enough, even if it's not good for him, God gives it to him. That's a dangerous principle that one needs to know. But if one wants something badly enough, even if it's not good for you, God will give it to you. That's why it's a very bad bracha. In fact, it's not a bracha at all. It's sometimes a klola, sometimes a curse, to say to somebody, I wish you everything that you wish yourself. It's a dangerous thing. Because who knows whether what I wish myself is good for me? And if I wish it hard enough, and certainly if other people also wish it, I'll get it. And that might be the worst thing for me. So when a man is prepared to stand with Mesidus Nefesh and to campaign for a position of leadership, and he's prepared to campaign using all his Olam Hazeh and all his Olam Haba, he's prepared to sacrifice this world and the world to come, he's prepared to put money into it and to talk Lashon Hara, both just to get the job. One thing you can be sure, that he's fit for the job? No. That's not. Any man who pursues the job is not fit for the job. Will he get it? Very possibly he can get it. And then does he have the siyata dishmaya? Not necessarily. The man who is fit for the job, the man who is right for the job, gets the siyata dishmaya. Of course, that's part of the whole fallacy of our democratic system. It's necessary to operate the way they operate in order to become leaders. It wasn't like that in the time of the Torah. The time of the Torah, leadership was from above. God told the Novi to appoint the king. That was the direction it came. And the king appointed those under him, and it all went down that way. The appointment of leadership was from the top downwards. Democracy is from the bottom upwards. It's the lowest level of society which has the biggest say in the appointment of the leader. That means it's necessary to appeal to the lowest level of society in order to get the job. Is it surprising that they descend to such depths of human degradation to pursue the COVID and to pursue the job? It's not only in these international elections. It applies in day-to-day activities as well. What people are sometimes prepared to do, to walk over other people, to stand on other people, to hurt other people, to promote themselves into positions of leadership. Who needs it? Who wants it? The person who wants it least, who is often the one who needs to be called in to do the job. Because he understands the job. He's sensitive to the job. And it's he who will have the siyata dishmaya for the job.